This is Game On. With your host, Seat Williams. Game On!
Back on the streets of Vegas, feeling good here as we move along. Hump Day, Seat Williams. Ari's back in the ones and twos. Plenty to get to. Nick Hamilton, NBC Sports LA. He's going to drop in, talk about the future of the Rams, the Chargers. We'll take a look at the Clippers, the Lakers. He is our insider out in Los Angeles. Catch him also morning after 9 to noon, Dash Radio on Saturdays. Plenty of stuff we'll talk about. Actually, both OCs coming back for San Diego. Giveaway coming up in that final go-round, San Diego State and the Running Rebels. We'll do that about 40, 45 minutes from now, something of that nature. And, of course, a Lighters Up Dope in about 15 minutes. Right now, we're going to a good friend of ours. He is our insider with the Vegas Golden Knights. You call him Joe Finn. You can hear his show Saturdays right on this station, 7 to 8 a.m., Clayton Hamilton. Clay, what's up, baby?
How much, man? How you doing?
Whew, not as good as the G Knights.
Yeah, you living the dream?
They are.
They are, for sure.
Wow. You know, how are you, by the way?
I'm doing well. Things are going well. The Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show is popping, and we got the pregame, postgame, intermission report, so running me around busy.
And you just came off on Fox, 98.9 FM. 1340 Sports Radio, which your show comes on 2 to 3.
2 to 3, yeah. So right before you.
And you guys do pre, post. I mean, you're racing. Kind of give us a scene setter of what it's like on a night, on a Golden Knights home game, like coming up this weekend when Edmonton comes.
Right.
And by the way, we're giving tickets away for that tomorrow in the show. What is it like? You're out there. Run us through your
so we're out among the people, and we do the pregame show from section 212 213 on the concourse at T-Mobile Arena. So we're outside Bite Ride, the Live Lucky Bar and Pink's Hot Dogs. So we do the pregame show out there, and then we do the intermission reports from there, the first and second period. And then after the second period, we tear it all down and rush to the beer house and do the beer house from Toshiba Plaza in New York, New York. We do the postgame show from there.
And this is every game.
Every home game we're there. Every road game we're out and about in the community. Sometimes we're born and raised, Parkway Tavern, Mackenzie River Pizza. So
how much time do you have between game completion to get to the postgame? And how many steps, elevators, how many miles?
There's an elevator and across the plaza, and it's really bad for Ari. Ari's got the hard work because he's got to tear everything down from the pregame show and then rebuild it for the postgame show. Frank and I just have to find a place to watch the third period. That's always our task, finding a place. We have to leave the arena to get to the beer house, so we got a series of televisions along our walk that we sort of stop until the commercial break, and then we move to the next one until the commercial break, and then we finally get to the beer house.
You know, in talking to several people about the Golden Knights, who are they? Why is this going down? In the end, the conclusion is somebody said they're just good.
They are good, and they've taken the opportunity that presents them. And it's something that I've said a lot, Seed, and you probably know this to be true. You can only do what you can do. Right? Until somebody else gives you the opportunity to do more. And that's what's happened with this team, is that they were looked at as being a specific type of player in a specific type of system that's going to present a specific result. And when they got to the Golden Knights, it was a blank slate, and they had the opportunity to reinvent themselves and to be more of a contributing player. They were given more ice time. They were allowed to be on the penalty kill or on the power play in situations that they weren't given that opportunity at their previous organization, and they've taken that opportunity and made the most of it.
The team right now, 29-10-2, 60 points, 10 of 11 they've won, top in the Pacific. And explain the bye week in hockey to folks that aren't that familiar with it.
They're on their bye week. Every team will have one, a five-day period of no practice and no games. So the team, it's just kind of like a vacation week. It's like the bye week in football where you have practice up to a certain point and then you're off. And then you can't rejoin the team or have any meetings or media availability. It's a complete and total off week. Every team will go through it, and they stagger it over about a three-week period. Like a third of the teams will be off, and then another third and another third.
So if your kids are going to the ice rink, can they put on skates?
No.
They can't put on skates?
No. They're completely off all hockey activity.
What happens if you get popped?
I don't know. I don't know that any of them are really anxious to do that. So Some of them are headed to warm climates, and especially those guys in Canada.
We got a report from somewhere up in Montana. Mm-hmm. One of the players in hockey during a bye week caught skating with his side piece.
What's crazy to me is the lengths that people will go to in the NHL to go different places. Now, for me, if I'm going to travel someplace, like traveling's a hassle for me, and I don't want to spend a day getting someplace and a day getting back just to spend 2 days there. Like the guys that go back to Sweden or they'll go back to Finland for 2 days, like that's a lot of travel for me.
Wow.
To do that.
Yeah. Okay, now break down the personnel. Tell us who they are. What they do, what their best skill sets are, the goalie situation. We know Fleury was out early, but it was almost like we didn't have a net, right?
Right. Fleury has been so good in the time that he was there, even though he missed 25 games. He was just named to the All-Star team today. He will be representing.
And he missed 25 games.
That's
how good he is.
That's how good he is, and that's how good of a season he is. He's going to be joined by James Neal, who also made the All-Star team today, as well as head coach Gerard Gallant, who's going to coach the Pacific Division. So three Golden Knights headed. Jonathan Marchessault, William Karlsson named as alternates. We may see them at the All-Star game as well. But Marc-Andre Fleury, you can't underestimate or overstate what he has meant to this team and his ability to be that stopgap. And there's a reason that they had an 11. They're an 11 game win streak, that have gotten points in 11 games and or 10 out of 11. So he's just been that good.
Wow, that is incredible. You know, you give it a thought. Now here's the team expansion team. They're not teammates. You're picking guys up. You're trying to assemble this team, trying to get things together. Hope you have chemistry. Everything else is working. As far as it working, what made it work?
Well, we've asked that question to several players, and we've gotten the same answer across the board, whether they're veteran players or whether they're rookie players. And they've said the same thing. Like, when I first came here to Lotus, right, I was the guy that had to fit in because I was the new guy. So I had to meet everybody and cultivate a relationship and find out like where I fit in, right? And special thanks to you. You were the very first person that I met here, and you were very welcoming to me. But with other folks, sometimes it's a little bit more of a challenge to get to know them. All of these guys came in, and you had 20-something guys who were all the new guy. Everybody was the new guy.
Got you.
And so some of those clicks and those barriers and those, how do we look at you? You're going to upset things. Everybody was upsetting things because everybody was new. And they said it really broke it down. They went in past cases where they might have been too shy to go and introduce themselves to a player of the stature of Marc-Andre Fleury or James Neal. Didn't matter because everybody was new. So everybody's getting to know everybody. And those walls and those barriers broke down really early.
Who's the alpha?
This is a great, 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 great question because there's a different one depending on where they are. So at practice,
what do you mean?
At practice, the alpha is Derek Englund, Pierre-Édouard Bellemare. Those are the guys that run practice. When they get to the locker room, the guy that runs the locker room is David Perron and Eric Halla. When they're on the bus and they're traveling, cracking people up, and that guy, Nate Schmidt and Colin Miller are the guys. When you're in the game and you're looking to guys that are gonna steady the action, it's Braden McNabb and it's Riley Smith. So depending on what you're doing, that's who the leader is.
And how does that happen?
They don't have a captain. There's no captains on this team. They have a leadership committee of 6 to 8 guys, veteran players, that take care of those captain's duties. But people have taken the role that they're the most comfortable in, and that's the way it goes.
Have you ever seen that before?
No.
I've never seen that in any sports team ever.
Mm-mm.
Where guys, like you said, and that goes back to what you said in the beginning, they didn't have, everybody was equal. You were the newcomer coming in, mm-hmm. so everybody has to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
So in fitting in, you find out what your best skill set is as far as a leadership role, and those guys basically, without having a captain,
right,
they figured out who the alphas were, and everybody else followed them, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you go into a new team as a free agent, say you're going into Montreal, you're going into an expectation level by the fan base. You're going into an expectation level by the players who all have thought of who you are and what you were when you came in. When this team got put together, these guys didn't know who was going to be here all year. They didn't know who was going to be traded at the deadline. They didn't know who was going to be traded before the season. They didn't know who was going to be sent to Chicago, to the AHL. So every one of them, it was check the ego at the door because we're all playing for our career. And that's what they did.
Wow. Clayton Hamilton, Joe Fan Show. Catch him Saturday, 7 to 8. He does a show right here on NBC Sports Radio 920. Game. I almost said Game On. That's the name of our show.
That's right.
The Game On. Yep.
Yeah.
Now, they play Edmonton. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the Oilers. The Oilers smashed them 8-2 the first time. The only team to really get them. Huh?
Yeah, Oilers took them to the woodshed. And there's been really two games, maybe three games this year that they haven't been competitive against Dallas here at home when they lost 3-0, and when they got smacked around by Winnipeg. So this game was... it's the one you want to throw out, you burn the tape. And Edmonton's coming in... it's their last game before their bye week. So it's our first game back from our bye week, their last game before their bye week. So you wonder what their focus level is going to be. They're a team that is almost out of any kind of playoff consideration. So it should be fun to see how the second game around goes, because that loss has stuck with all these Golden Knights, because they don't have a lot of bad ones, but they had a bad one with them, and they want them back.
One little payback. Mm-hmm. Okay, but when you're 29-10-2, you got 60 points, you're on top of the Pacific. Did the bye week come at a bad time when you're on fire?
You think that. And teams, generally speaking, coming back from a bye week, if they're playing another team that didn't come back from a bye week, they do very poorly. So the odds makers, I think, will probably have this a little bit closer than maybe it should be, because we're coming back and they're getting ready to go on and have been playing all week. So
who's the biggest fan favorite?
You know, I think it's quickly becoming either Jonathan Marchessault or William Karlsson. And those guys score a ton of goals. They're fast. They're fun. They're as humble as can be. And Braden McNabb's starting to pick up a lot of fans because he just lays the wood to people. And they love that. People love when you see a guy skating down the ice and just gets blown up. And that's always Braden McNabb that does it. So he's becoming a fan.
How many
favorite.
Fights? I mean, I haven't heard much and seen
not
much.
Many. Three
How did
fights.
They avoid the fights?
Three fights all season long.
All
season long. Eric Halla, who never gets in a fight, but he got cheap shotted, so he went had a fight. William Carrier had a fight, and Lucas Spezza just had a fight. And unfortunately for Lucas Spezza, he tore a ligament in his finger, had surgery today. He's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. So
how come? I mean, how do they avoid the brawls?
They skate away a lot. There's a lot of guys who do the face washing and the pushing and the shoving, and they skate away a fair number of times. So
don't tell me they're running.
No, they just the guys like, joking. You want to go? And they're like, no, not really. I don't want to sit in the box. You know, I'm just going to outskate you. And a lot of it times too, when they get to the third period, they've outworked teams so hard that the teams just give up.
You know what they sound like? Also, almost like a badger or a pest, where they get under your skin. And you're like, well, they won't stop. I'm watching the game. They're down 1-0, and I can't recall who the opponent was. And then second period, they just would not stop. It was almost like they were on a power play the whole period.
You see a lot of teams come in, and they're like, yeah. We've heard that they skate hard, and they work hard, and they're fast. Yeah, whatever. And then they get out there, and they see the speed. And by the second, third period, they're like, wow, they were really fast. They are everything that everyone said they were.
Mm. Awesome. Once again, give mention to your shows.
Oh, yeah. I'm on the Joe Fan Show each and every Saturday morning, 7 o'clock here on NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game, and then the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show 2 to 3 every day over on Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM, 1340 AM.
Always a pleasure, my friend, Insider for Vegas Golden Knights.
Did you say Dope is up next?
Dope is up next.
I have a dope. Can I stick around for one dope?
Yeah, you want to stick around? You got one?
I got one dope guy. Can I give it to you?
You serious? You got a dope?
Oh, I got it. It's dope.
Okay.
All right.
Lighters up. Dope is next.
Man, I've been saving for a special occasion.
Looks like a quarter pounder, man. Let the blood.
Hey, be careful with that, man.
Is it heavy stuff, man? Will it blow me away?
It's time now for... Man, that show is dope.
3:18 in the valley. Lighters up. Pass it. This right here is a really cool story. for you football fans out there, you watch the collisions, you watch sometimes improper tackling and bad technique, and then sometimes the guy's just off balance because the opponent with the football is ducking, and so you duck your head. And kind of the case what happened with Ryan Shazier of the Steelers. And many of us didn't know that he was actually paralyzed to the point where he had no use of his legs, but I guess within the last week, he started to have movement in his legs. And this right here takes it even to another level on the positive side. He says, I want to thank the Lord for the first downs that has been allowing me to achieve. The touchdown is going to come in his timing. But today was the first down. I was finally able to make it to practice. So he makes it to practice, surprising his teammates with the Steelers in a wheelchair. They play the Jaguars, who got them 30-9, I believe, back in week number 5. And, of course, you heard what Big Ben said. Hey, we want to play them again. Be careful what you wish for. This team picked you 5 times. But just watching and looking at Shazier in his wheelchair in the indoor workout facility for the Steelers, I mean, the dude was paralyzed. He had no movement in his legs and his lower body. But to see this dude, and he's lost a ton of weight. You can look at his legs and see that all the muscle mass in his legs are gone. But to see the fact that he has still got that confidence, that swagger, and he still has hope to get his health back, first of all, and he still has his life, to see him at practice today was pretty dope.
It's amazing. What can you tell me a little bit about the injury, though? Just
the injury. The injury was he's going to make a regular tackle in the middle of the interior defense, and his head was down. His head was slightly down. He could have been off balance, whatever. And when he took the impact of the hit from the ball carrier, you could see right away he went straight to the ground and grabbed his back, his lower back, and they had to take him off the field on a stretcher. We didn't know then, but he was paralyzed. He was paralyzed at that time. And Mike Tomlin went to the hospital that night. It was a rainy day in that football game. Spent the night there. Other players spent plenty of time. And then we didn't know. I didn't know at the time that he was totally paralyzed from the waist down.
Yeah.
But you look at him here and you can see that his legs, he doesn't have his legs anymore. I mean, the muscle mass is totally gone. But he's a fighter. And when you're a fighter, Clayton, you know this, you give yourself an opportunity. So this is cool to see him at practice today.
And it's cool the way that he describes it as each step that he's making is getting a first down, you know, putting it into a language that he understands and a perspective that he understands and says, hey, you know what, I'm not going to, you know, not every play is designed to score a touchdown, right? So you, to be able to say, hey, I'm getting a first down, I'm moving down the field, I'm progressing, that's pretty cool. That's dope.
It is dope. You know dope. What? You got some good dope, too. Your dope goes way to the other side of the world.
Yeah, right? I kind of feel like a jerk now because your dope is inspirational. My dope is just silly.
But this is me every day, just so you know.
But you are popping a cherry here, your first dope.
That's right, my first dope. And let's go to the Olympics. And we all thought that North Korea was not going to show up because the Olympics are in South Korea and they boycotted last time they were there in Seoul, 1988. But they had a special delegation met with the IOC and the South Korean government to create some parameters in which North Koreans would be allowed to attend and participate in the Olympics. But North Korea had a couple of caveats to it. It wasn't just that their two athletes were going to get to go a pairs figure skating team. They wanted to be able to send a delegation along with it, including some politicians and businessmen, but also a Taekwondo demonstration group.
What do you mean?
A group of Taekwondo people to do demonstrations. Okay. I don't quite get it or understand it, but what the real thing is they want to send an army with them, but it's called an Army of Beauties, the North Korean Cheerleading Charm Team, which is a group of young ladies from North Korea that are selected based upon their physical appearance and ideology that go to cheer for their teams. There's between 288 and 303, and why they got that number, I do not know. But the bevy of models attends the games that the North Koreans play in, and they cheer for them. And the official statement on them says, having a cheering crowd of attractive North Koreans at the games will be good for North Korea's global image.
Nice. Right. We love you long time.
And the funny part is that Kim Jong-un, his wife, she was a member of the 2005 cheerleading squad, which is where he met her. Her name is Ri Sol-ju, but everybody just calls her Miss Ri.
Miss Ri.
Miss Ri, or as being married to Kim Jong-un, she's Misery.
Wow. That's pretty dope.
That is dope.
That's dope. That's
288 models attending North Korea's Paris figure skating competition.
I like to be the manager to clean the room up.
Women make everything like that better. You could sell anything with some pretty ladies, right?
288.
Go to Northern Korea. Just kidding. All right. Speaking of ladies, terrible segue. In Scottsdale, Arizona, at Elements Restaurant and Sanctuary Camelback Mountain Resort, Harvey Weinstein was there eating dinner with his sober coach, which I just learned today. It's exactly what it sounds like. He's, you know, helping him get sober and clean. So two men sat next to the table next to them. And a lot of the story is allegedly it was on TMZ. There's details of it that are still to be determined. But a man came over, they sat down next to them, and he said he loves his movies and wanted a photo. And then apparently Weinstein became belligerent and told the man to go away, which I thought was interesting since he's with his sober coach. The manager, on the other hand, says that Weinstein was not belligerent, yet was, quote, very sweet about it, and he just simply said he didn't want to take a picture. As the fan and his friend were leaving, the story is that the fan walked up to Weinstein and said, "You are such a piece of S for what you did to these women," and punched him in the face twice. But the manager says neither attempted punch connected, and the guy was super drunk and out of control and probably just swinging at the air. Both sides corroborated that being the truth. So, and a person filmed the incident and asked Weinstein if he wanted to call the police, but he declined and everybody took off. So I just thought it was dope. If it happened, that guy deserves way more than a punch. And it's just cool to see that he can't go do anything in peace either and enjoy his life because people are bringing misery to his. Not to be so negative, but that to me is dope.
What do you think?
I think it's kind of funny, the dichotomy of the two, that in the hashtag MeToo world, that this exists in North Korea where they send models to,
right.
To
right. The Olympics.
Sporting events in the Olympics. Yeah. It's just, what a different world.
Absolutely.
We each live in.
Yeah. Well, over there, though, if you're a woman, I mean, what type of space do you get at all in North
Korea?
Right,
exactly. In an oppressive regime like that, where human rights for all people, particularly women, are very low, and then the only way out is to be a cheerleading model.
Yep. This one will cut to the chase. O.J. Simpson. Now, 34 years ago, there was a rumor that he kind of snuck in behind Robert's back, knocked up Chris, and had Chloe. Well, TMZ caught up with him recently. Chloe supposedly is pregnant, and they congratulated OJ.
Congratulations in order?
For what?
We hear Chloe finally announced that she's pregnant.
Well, for Bob, God bless his soul, yeah. But
really?
I don't know for me. I don't think for me. I have nothing to do with it. Chloe and girls were all terrific girls when they were growing up, nice and terrific. I think today they're still nice and terrific, except they've kind of added sex appeal to their resume. I'm happy for them. Congratulations to her. But trust me, I have nothing to do with it. I would be proud if I had anything to do with it, but I don't.
No.
God bless him.
No.
OJ.
OJ. You know what's really dope is you used OJ, cut, and chase all in the same sentence.
OJ's down with the swirl, I can tell you that.
Yeah. That sets the record straight, at least for now. 34 years ago, no, he did not slip in behind Robert Kardashian's back and get some back from Chris and knock her up with Chloe. At least he says no. And then he said, trust me.
Well, OJ hasn't lied before.
Never.
So.
And if he did do it, That's the question. Because isn't that what the book was?
Right.
If he did knock Chloe up,
this is how it would have happened. Right.
That's what it was. Yep. This is how it would happen.
You got one more to roll out?
I got another one. Yeah, let's roll this up. Get us out of this dope here. In Kandamal, Odisha, which is in India, probably should have just said the gentleman, but Jalandhar Nayak, this gentleman, that's his name, he is a father of the lone family in the Gumi village, and his three sons want to study. So, gentleman literally is moving mountains. He's digging through a mountain till he reaches what's called Sudrubali, which is 15 kilometers, which is well over 15 miles. He's using a crowbar, pickaxe, and grub hoe, and just sheer determination, and carving through. Basically, they can't get to this school physically. There's no way. There's no road there. It's out in the middle of nowhere. And he didn't have an opportunity to get educated as a young man. He didn't get to go to school, so he refuses to let that happen to his kids, and he's literally just hammering through. He's been at it for now a month and a half. He completed 5 to 6 kilometers already. And now that he's done it, the government found out, and they are going to actually help him finish it up so that his kids can get educated.
How far is 5 kilometers? Do we know?
Not 5 kilometers is 3.2 miles.
There you go. Wow.
That would be...
You just know that off the top of
your head. Because a 5K race blocks, is 3.2 right? miles.
Ah, so. 32 blocks.
Yeah. So.
Wow. That's a dope story.
Pretty impressive, right?
Pretty dope.
Yeah. Education is everything.
Clayton.
There you go.
Appreciate you, bro.
Yeah, anytime, man.
Vegas Knights, at what time this weekend against Edmonton?
Edmonton, pregame show will be on at 6:30, puck drop at 7 o'clock, intermission reports, and then the postgame for an hour and a half after the end of
and
the game.
And that's Saturday.
That's on Saturday. Saturday the 13th. And then Fan Fest down at the D, 3 to 5, Fremont Street Experience on Sunday. Frank and I will be down there, and Chance, the mascot, and some of the players, and be a good time.
All right, we'll be giving away San Diego State Rebel tickets for the 27th in the final go-round today. Tomorrow, Edmonton G-Night tickets. Clayton, love you, bro.
Anytime.
Lighters down. Nick Hamilton next.
Now back to Game On. Seat Williams.
Back on the streets of Vegas, 3:34, as we move on a hump day here. As Clayton Hamilton came in with the hockey stuff, the Golden Knights, 29-10-2, 60 points, 10 of 11 in their last games. A first place in the Pacific. Neil, Fleury, Gallant, their coach, all going to the All-Star game in the Pacific. I mean, just what can you say about an expansion team? Boy, they get it. So does this guy. He's out in Los Angeles, NBC Sports LA, Nick Hamilton. What's up, brother?
Hey, what's going on, man? You know, the Kings are coming. They're coming. They get it right.
I think we spanked the Kings already a couple of times.
We did.
That's all right. The season, there's still plenty of season left. Don't you worry.
We're halfway there, brother.
It's the end of the season, not what you do in the beginning or the middle.
Oh, we're going to have to do some wagering. Yeah, you say, well, pay your first bet up that you lost to me, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. We're in a whole new year now.
Oh, I love to double down. I love to double down. All right, speaking of which, and so does Atlanta. And I got to tell you this, the Falcons, and you cover the Rams and the Chargers and everything else out there in SoCal, but the Rams had a terrific regular season. And I'm not going to go and say they were just inexperienced. I'm going to say the Atlanta Falcons pushed a button that said urgency. Their secondary, Toufant, Alfred, they were knocking everything away from the receivers. Goff just, everything he threw up that normally would be completed, it was being swatted away. Their defense stepped up, and they showed us, you know what, unlike what we saw with Carolina 2 years ago, Carolina went to the Super Bowl, and then the following year they stank up the joint. Atlanta's saying, guess what, we belong back there. This is our first step on the way back. They looked impressive against the Rams.
Oh, they did. I mean, no question. I mean, the Rams are out here on that lemon booty, man. They were playing tight. I mean, the first four sets, I mean, they couldn't get past midfield offensively. They couldn't get a rhythm going. Defensively, I mean, they held the Falcons. They saved a touchdown up until Devontae Freeman scored the first touchdown in the first half. But the Rams just came in there. I think it was a case of, you know, the eyes were bigger than their stomach. In other words, they had a big stage. They were at home, and there was a lot of pressure on them. They had just completed a great season, as you mentioned, winning the NFC West. And I think it was so much pressure on a bunch of young guys who have never done it before. I will say there's somewhat some inexperience there. And I think a lot of the Rams players, even after the game, they were obviously disappointed at the loss, but gave a lot of credit to Matt Ryan, gave a lot of credit to the Falcons' defense. But also, too, they realize they're building something special with Sean McVay. And they realize, I mean, this is going to be in their mouths. This is a taste that's going to be in their mouths for a long time. And they're not going to forget this. And it's a good thing because you want guys to come back with a chip on their shoulder, especially younger guys who have never done it before, and come back and say, okay, you know what? What do we do wrong? What do we have to do to get over the hump? And that's what they're looking forward to. But it was a good game, at least for the Atlanta Falcons, I should say. But, I mean, the crowd was hyped. It wasn't a lack of crowd participation. It was a lack of home crowd. There were a lot of Rams fans in the building. And so the Rams just failed to execute. And then especially in the second half, I mean, Matty Ice was picking that defense apart. It looked like the old Matty Ice. And as I told you last week, we didn't know which Atlanta Falcons team was going to show up. Is it that Atlanta Falcons team with that sense of urgency that played their way into the playoffs as a wild card? Or are we going to see that lackluster second half of the 28-3 Super Bowl Falcons that we saw that just completely turned everything off? And the Falcons that we saw was not only had a sense of urgency, but they realized they want to taste and they want to crack back at the potential New England Patriot matchup in the Super Bowl in Minnesota. So I think their eyes were set on that. I think their eyes will continue to be set on that. But they have another tough test coming up this week. So, you know, we'll see what happens when it comes to the Rams. There's a lot of questions about whose contracts are going to be taken care of. Obviously, Aaron Donald's contract needs to be a priority moving forward. But then you have to look at Tremaine Johnson, a couple of other guys in the fold that are looking to get contract extensions, or they might be just cut loose and moving on to other teams.
You know, also, you made a very good point. When you're a young team and you're as good as the Rams are, and McVay, you have a coach who's young, he's basically the age of their veterans, and you make it to the playoffs, your first go-round. Sometimes if you're bad enough, if you're good enough, if you're confident enough, you have a swagger, and you really can meet the expectations of that swagger, it's good to lose that first time in the playoffs. And you hit it on the head because you're going to be pissed. You're going to hate it. It was a home game, so obviously now you're at home before your fans and your family, and you just got beat 26 to 10 in that ball game. And now it's a case where you're thinking, 26-13, I beg your pardon. It's a case where you're thinking, man, that sucked. Just wait till, and you're thinking all the while during the offseason, wait till next year. You're right. They could build off this. You've got a thing called growing pains, and if they're built properly, and I think they are, it was probably as good to lose that game and better for them to lose it than to win it, because if you win it, well, we won a playoff. No, you lost. You got nothing. You made the playoffs. You got nothing. If you're bad enough, you're pissed, and you come back and you correct it the next year.
No, absolutely, you can. But I think also, too, it could have been a slightly different mentality if, say, they were on the road starting out in the playoffs. You know, you might have been able to squeak out a win because, you know, you're on the road in a hostile environment. And they played actually better on the road this season than they have at home. I mean, they're 3-5 at home, and they're 0-1 in a playoff game at home. But during the regular season, they're 3-5. They were much better on the road than they were at home. So I think maybe the results could have been slightly different. They could have squeaked out a win and moved on to the next round against the Minnesota Vikings if they were playing the Falcons in the Mercedes-Benz Dome. But, again, I think sometimes you could be at home, you could be a little bit more comfortable, a little bit too much at ease, and sometimes you could be a little too relaxed. And I think, you know, sometimes, like you said, being a young team, you can come back to bite you, and it certainly did. So we'll see what next season provides. Obviously, they have a lot of questions on the offseason, especially when it comes to the draft and what positions they're going to draft for and things like that. But, yeah, Jared Goff was not a happy camper, neither was Todd Gurley, but they understand, like I said, they know what's at stake. They understand now it's in their system. And until next year, man, it'll stay with them for a good while.
Nick Hamilton, NBC Sports LA, morning after. I believe it's 9 till noon Saturdays.
Well, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern Dash Radio.
You got it. Okay, so what personnel changes, if any, or additions or subtractions do you see with the Rams?
I don't think they're going to re-sign Tremaine Johnson. He had a really good, solid season this year for them because he can no longer be franchise tag. And I think if you're going to go and make sure you take care of your big man in Aaron Donald, that's going to take away some money that could go to Tremaine Johnson. So I think Tremaine Johnson may potentially walk, and if so, then they have an option during the draft of drafting a quarterback. From what I've been hearing, they're looking at drafting a corner and a safety during the draft. So that may be some indication that Tremaine Johnson could be up out of there. For right now, that's what I've been told. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, if Tremaine likes to take a pay cut and stay with the team, then he'll be with the team. But I don't think he'll be taking a pay cut anytime soon. My man is about his money. He should be. That's what good players do. That's what good businessmen do. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, Ram fans, you could hold your chest out proudly. You had a really good year. You have a good team. McVay's a good coach, good organization. You're going to have a new stadium. It's all good for the Ram and Rams. Now let's cross town. They play at StubHub, the Chargers in L.A. Now, Eric Williams of ESPN.com, he's a staff writer for ESPN. You know E, we work with him quite a bit, does some great work.
Guy.
Now, he listed the quarterbacks that the Chargers bought in before the draft last year. Now, get this list, peeps. They had a chance. Remember, they were seventh in the draft, and I believe only one guy on this list they couldn't have got, and that would have been Pat Mahomes, right? Pat Mahomes, I don't think, was available at number seven. But they also bought in Nathan Peterman, who's with Buffalo, Deshaun Kizer, Joshua Dobbs for Tennessee Volunteer, and also they bought Deshaun Watson in with Mike Williams. Now, Patrick Mahomes, Peterman, Kizer, Dobbs, Watson, five quarterbacks, and they bought Williams' teammate at Clemson with Deshaun Watson. Instead of taking a quarterback, they took the receiver, Williams, who was injured most of the year. You can't figure this stuff out sometimes, man. Gee, what the hell? He missed all of the OTAs, training camp with the calf and then the shoulder. And it's like, well, I'm not going to call the kid a bust, but you had a chance to already get your quarterback. All right. Cardwell Jones and Kellen Clemens are their backups to Phillip Rivers. So why are you going to wait a year? I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, they dodged a lot of bullets with that quarterback. The quarterbacks on the list, the only two quarterbacks that are willing that you can possibly draft that would have been good would have been Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. Okay, let's just be quite clear. The Pede man, better known as Nathan Peterman, we saw what he did.
Yeah.
So he's garbage. Deshaun Kizer is not a great NFL quarterback.
Game
I don't
time.
Know how much you develop it. He's not. He's not. But I think you're taking a gamble if you didn't take those guys because there's no guarantee about the quarterback class this year. I mean, as we talked about last week, when you look at what's at stake at 17, unless you're going to trade up and give up some pieces to trade up, you're rolling the dice very, very heavily. And there's no guarantee that you're going to get a quarterback. And if you don't get a quarterback in this draft class, you're pretty much screwed because, God forbid, if Phillip Rivers goes down, your team is done for the year. Because I do not believe in Kellen Clemens, and I do not believe in Cardale Jones. I'm sorry, I just don't. Nothing against those guys personally. I just look at the skill set. I look at how they line up, and it doesn't line up in the direction that Anthony Lynn and the Chargers want to go in with the rest of their pieces on offense.
When you think back, the Chargers, the only quarterback they've drafted since Phillip Rivers is Brad Sorensen in 2013. They took him in the final round, and he would show promise. I remember watching him, and then when they put him in the game, he got lost.
And he was on a Mill Carton All-Star.
Yeah, I mean, you're watching him in drills, right, at training camp in August. I'm like, man, this kid right here might be Phillip Rivers' understudy. And then they put him in a preseason game, man, and it was like, what the hell?
And remember, we all laughed, right? Remember that. We all laughed that day.
Phillip Rivers, 36 now. He threw for 4,515 yards, 28 TDs, 10 picks, one of his best years of his career. Pro Bowl for the seventh year. Eight children, God bless him. Beautiful wife, beautiful family. This man is happy, isn't he?
Oh man, he is ecstatic. At the same time, you have a franchise that's making you the face and it's paying you and giving you all the fringe benefits that a quarterback of his stature has needs and wants. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything more. I had some discussions with a few writers about the future of the Chargers, especially at the quarterback position. And a couple of them, I was sitting there scratching my head, wondering what they drank that morning, because apparently they sound like they had been drunk, like they need to be tested, because there's no way in hell you're going to sit up here and convince me that Phillip Rivers has another 3, 4, 5 years left in the tank. I'm sorry,
how many you see?
Everybody wants to compare him to Tom Brady, but Brady is a unique style of quarterback in the way he's taking care of his body. In that Bill Belichick system that's enabled him to play another year or 2 years past 40 years of age. I don't see that with Phillip Rivers at all.
Here's a couple of things. When Peyton Manning was in trouble, later in his career mostly, when the sack was coming, Peyton Manning would concede and he would just crumble and go down, right, into a fetal position. He would concede the sack. The thing that has helped Phillip Rivers survive, to me, when he's in real trouble and he's about to get hit and he has a chance, he throws the ball in the ground past the scrimmage line. He knows how to survive by not taking the hit, by getting the ball off. A lot of quarterbacks, he doesn't try to escape, all right? He doesn't have the ability to run away from a 340-pound guy who can run a 5'4", okay? And he knows that. And that's another reason why he's played every game of his career. But you're right. He's 36. How many years do you see left in the tank for Rivers?
I say anywhere between 1 to 2, to be quite honest with you. And after that, it's pretty much a wrap. I mean, that's just what it is. I mean, your body, Father Time is undefeated.
Yeah, his best year.
Your body's going to let you know when it's time to hang him up, whether you want to or not.
Best year. What are you saying?
I still think he has another year or two. I mean, just think about it. This is a young man's game. You have guys that are younger, faster, stronger, 300-pound-plus guys coming at you at the speed of light. You're not going to be able to take that, especially if your O-line is not up to par. And what I'm saying to you is Phillip Rivers may have another year or two, and after that, he's pretty much – it's a wrap because it's a young man's game. And he's going to continue – like I said, remember, this was a great year for him this year. But let's not forget those years where he threw those countless interceptions that cost them games, that cost him a playoff opportunity. They still have yet to win the division since what? Tom Telesco took over?
Yep.
So, I mean, come on, man. If it doesn't improve and he's not getting any younger, in the words of my man Jack and my guy's Jagged Edge, if he ain't getting no younger, we might as well do it. Well, hey, we might as well go on and get this man his retirement papers in another year or two because he ain't getting no younger. So you might as well draft a quarterback if you can, develop him under Phillip Rivers where he can learn the game, learn how to be a professional, and then prepare him for a moment where he's going to come into a game and take you guys to hopefully to another level.
Boy, you give it a thought. The Chargers had Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers on the roster at the same time for at least two, three years and still hasn't won a championship. By the way, the Chargers are bringing back their DC, Gus Bradley, also Wisenhunt, their OC. And they signed a kicker, Robert Aguayo. Where was this? If they had this kicker, they would have made the playoffs this year.
Nah, I walk by sight. I don't walk by faith when it comes to Chargers kickers. I walk completely by sight. We'll see.
Well, I mean, that's better than what they had. Look, how
Anything,
many kick-
You and I are better than what they had. Let's be clear about that.
Yeah, me left-footed. How many kickers did actually suit up and kicked for them this year from the beginning? Count them.
I want to say five. I want to say there were five different kickers.
Listen to this. The LA Chargers had five different place kickers kicking field goals from this year. From the rookie kid, what was his name? The Asian kid?
Oh, Young Oku?
Oku. Yeah, him. And then they went back to the kicker from a year ago. And then they've had, you're right, it's five. They had five different kickers. They lost two to three games because of missed field goals down the stretch.
Absolutely.
So they could have had 10, 11 wins. What could have been doesn't matter anymore. We live in the real world. Like you said, we don't live in the world of make-believe. All right. But this guy does, LeVar Ball. He's in Lithuania. And his sons did pretty good yesterday. You see the highlights?
Unfortunately, that's 60 seconds of my life I cannot get back. But, yeah, I saw the highlights. I mean, they look pretty good. But, like I said, that's against overseas competition, a bunch of young junior college and high school kids that they're playing against. Like I said, you go over there to some real competition in Spain and in Italy and places like that, and then we'll see how well they match up. But, I mean, I'm not impressed. I think they're going to play overseas for life. Probably Lonzo's going to join them in another year or two. And they'll finally be able to play all together, my three sons, featuring LeVar, Puffy Knight Ball.
Hey, I'm going to tell you something. As long as Zoe is a Laker, Bron ain't coming there, man.
Why would he? I mean, now I'm kind of but I still think he will come. I don't think it's because of Lonzo. I think it's more for business reasons. I think it's more to develop and globalize his brand as LeBron James more than anything else.
Yeah, well, there's already a guy globalizing his brand. His name is LeVar Ball, the big ballers. There ain't room enough for two. Hey, brother, let the folks know where they can find you.
You can find me at Nick Hamilton LA on Instagram and Twitter, and every Saturday on Dash Radio, Dash Talk Station, the morning after with Nick Hamilton, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern.
All right, bro. We'll get you back on next week. Appreciate you.
Hey, thanks a lot. See, talk to you guys soon.
You got it. Nick Hamilton, NBC Sports LA. That'll wrap it for us. Also, we had Clayton Hamilton, Joe Fan. Check him out on Saturday, 7 to 8. He does his show live and give it to you. He's got peeps all over the country doing different takes for him. So you want to get up on that as well. All right, for Ari, Charles, I'm C. Yeah. You know it, folks. Let's do the giveaway right now. Caller number 9 at 702-365-9200, 702-365-9200. San Diego State, UNOV, 27th of this month at the MAC. Remember, folk, chin tucked low, guards up high. We'll see you on the radio. More of the show tomorrow. NBC Sports Radio 920. Game on. Game over.